Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
To the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z on Bashani Radio and iHeartRadio and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City, where you can listen to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z on any mobile phone or tablet device. The Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z, where we explore tech and enjoy the music. Today's guest is none other than Theotis Scott Jr., computer scientist and software developer. I invited him onto the show because he has seen the evolution of computing from the mainframe to the present, and I am anxious to hear what he has to say. He is a Cal State Dominguez alumni, and also a proud Jackrabbit alumni of Long Beach Polytechnic High School, the home of scholars and champions. Hello, and how are you today, Theota Scott?
Well, I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Thank you.
You have, I mean, a lot of people don't even know what a mainframe is. Can you talk a little bit about your background and what drew you to computers and a little bit about mainframes? I know that's a lot, but.
Let's see if I can give you the brief version of it, because I went to Cal Poly Pomona and I ran into a lot of obstacles out there. I went out there to play football as well as an industrial engineer. And, you know, you had to deal with the new thing of dealing with diversity, because the class that I went in was about 600 people of color, mainly Black folks that went in, and they had to adjust. And after all the obstacles I went through out there, I kind of got discouraged after 2 years, and I decided to go home and rethink my life. But the reason how I got into computers and mainframes is because Ben Hunter. My mother was looking at the Ben Hunter and Control Data Institute, and she asked me, well, what are you going to do? I'm going home to get me a job, maybe, you know, with the city, and then I'll figure it out from there. She says, oh, no, you're going back to school. So she talked me into going to Control Data Institute. And at Control Data, that's when I learned about computers. That's how I got into it. My mother, she encouraged me, and my dad, he actually paid for, part of the school loan, and he got the rest of it deferred until I could afford to pay it myself. So it was kind of surprising. So anyway.
So your parents, they both were involved in you.
Yes.
Going to get your education.
Yes. And I know anything about computers. My mom said, you like to work on all kinds of puzzles and stuff like that. She says, but computers, I think you would do well in it. So I said, okay, I don't know what computers are, but I went and took the aptitude test, and I scored something like a 98 on it. And they said, oh, no, you definitely have an aptitude for computers. So that's where I started.
So I have a question for you. What was it like breaking into technology, being African American, you know, after your mom told you to go do this thing that you guys really didn't know what it was until you were in the thick of it?
Well, let's go back a little bit. You said what a mainframe looks like. In those days, before even the mainframe, they had different types of machines like correlators and sorters. And it's like if you look at the old phone switch where you pull a cord out and you plug it in another hole and you can connect, you know, two people from talking. And so they had these, you know, logic boards. And then actually what you would you know, look at the logic board and you would have to plug in, like, you know, cables into each one of the ports to make sure the board does what you want. So we're actually, you can say, a step above pencil and paper, and we were doing it electronically. That was, and at that time, you had to read the Hollerith code. You would have to understand circuit boards. So you're actually twirling and flipping switches, you know, at that time. And the mainframes came after that. And by the time I was graduating, they finally had the IBM 360. And there you would sit at a key punch machine and type all your codes in, which in English. And then you would put it in the machine. The machine would convert it to a binary, you know, machine language, where anyone understand it. If you had one character off, that means you would take a nice thick deck, toss it away.
That was about a foot in thickness.
Yeah. It could be a foot and a half in thickness.
Wow. That's a lot of trees.
Yes. We were chopping down, killing trees then at that time.
Wow.
So, you know, the mainframes at that time, when you running a program through it, you would put in a deck of cards and you would get an output or a report, mm-hmm. or something, you know, depending on what it is, business report or some scientific report.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ones you saw, what was that that movie where the Black women that were
Hidden Figures?
Yes, that computer was a few generations after where I started.
Okay.
There they, you know, I remember seeing some tape drives and hard drives. That came, you know, later on.
Right.
But by the time I got out of the, graduated from Control Data in 72, I got a job at the TRW. And there, instead of IBM mainframes, where I went CDC mainframes, and they were more or less scientific. And I was kind of surprised. In the movie, they went after an IBM instead of a CDC. And CDC is more scientific than IBM. IBM is just like their name, this international business machine.
So I see what you're saying. There is a big difference.
Yes.
You know, when I was at MIT, we used like MATLAB, and it was on Linux boxes.
Yes.
Built by Silicon Graphics, which is very different than the PCs that you'll buy from Dell.
Yes.
Not as powerful.
No, not as powerful because the work.
Dells aren't as powerful as the SGI boxes we were on.
Yeah. Right. Well, see, the one thing is with the IBMs, you know, the word size, if you're understanding what the word size, you know, the length of the words is, if it's 8 bits, you can only get 8 bits of information in that word size. But if it gets up to 16, you can get 16 bits in the word size.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go today and you find that we're moving away from in the Windows from a 32-bit machine to a 64-bit machine, that means we can put more in memory. That means we can run faster, and it's just going faster and faster.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, you know, you had processors that was running 8 bits. So you can see we went from eight bits all the way to 64 bits.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And at that time, what I'm talking about, the mainframes, IBM was something, if I'm not mistaken, it was 32, but I know the CDC, when I actually did a lot of my work on it, it was a 60, you know, bit word. It was a lot larger. So you can see it was more conducive to,
complex computations.
Yes. And that's what it was designed for.
Right.
So
I have a question for you. So when you started, programming on mainframes, whether it's IBM box or mainframe or CDC, how has the programming languages evolved from those days to, you know, your Javas, your object-oriented languages, your SQLs and everything else? There's a huge universe of programming languages now.
Yeah. The logic in the, at that time, everything was done sequential, one step at a time. Wherever you freeze it in that time, that's what that computer's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now today, and if you know the difference in asynchronous and synchronous, it means when the languages now, they can spawn out a lot of processes and you write your code correctly, it doesn't matter which one comes in first, because if you put out a process, let's say you spawn a process 1, 2, 3, they may come back 3, 2, 1 or 1, 2, 3 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's a asynchronous. Is basically the languages like Java, JavaScript, and all those things, and it's pretty powerful, because that's why we can get into the smartphones and the artificial intelligence, and then plus on top of that, when you get into artificial and intelligent language, remember when you went to the AXL competition and we got in artificial,
right?
Yeah, then you get into the structure called recursion,
right?
And recursion, it's a kind of a language. And you got to think in terms, it's not a step by step by step. You may have, well, think of it this way, multitasking.
Right.
You're going to be multitasking. Yes. You may have something like 5,000 processes you're juggling at the same time, and each one come back, you got to understand how to deal with it.
Right.
So, and you don't know when they're going to come back. They're not in sequence. They be out in all kinds of orders, but you're going to create it. But recursion is a little different. I mean, you're gonna nest yourself way down in the processes. You know, it's hard to even explain to a person. You've done it so long, you know what, you know how it behaves, and and trying to explain it to someone else is like, how do you?
You take a lot of it for granted.
Yes.
You know, one thing that I think is really, you know, interesting is, you know, since you taught me how to code. You taught me how to code at a young age. My first language I was learning how to code in was BASIC.
Yes.
Remember the Commodores?
Yeah, that's even a different time.
Yeah, that's like a next step after.
Yeah, because
the mainframe.
It's like I was thinking about some of the cases I got into. You know, they got into courts and they were disputing over intellect properties. And a BASIC, when you speak of BASIC, it's an interpreter language. Just think of it this way. You tell a robot turn left, and the robot will turn, and he'll stop, and you say, turn right, and he'll, okay, and he'll stop, and then you got to give him the next command. That's more of an interpreter, you know, like basic. But if I turn around and I sit down and write all the instructions, say, okay, I'm going to write down how to get to, let's say, from our house, you know, to downtown Long Beach, and I write all the instructions, and it takes maybe about 500 steps that I know this computer has or this robot has to take. And I write them all down. Once I finish, I take the whole thing and give it to him, and it just, it goes down there. It's a more compiler. So what it does is it interprets it into a machine language, and you take that machine language and put it into the robot, and it knows all the stuff. It doesn't have to ask you, what do I do next? What do I do next? What do I do next? And that's what
it interprets. Because it has context.
Yes, it understands everything step by, because you already gave them all the instructions. As opposed to an interpreter, it's a type of language. Even though you gave him step one, two, and three, but if he has to repeat steps one, two, and three, he has forgotten all about step one. You have to tell it again. And step two, tell it again. Three, okay, now tell me step one again. If it just rotated from step one, two, three, you have to continue to tell this robot. That's an interpreter type. It's just more of a classroom type language, and that's what it basically is good for.
Okay, so I want to kind of switch gears here. Mm-hmm. So you talk a little bit about, you know, the evolution of the hardware and the software, i.e. the programming languages. But I want to know, how was it for you as a professional breaking into technology and being African-American or Black? I don't know which one you prefer. Do you prefer African-American or Black?
It's either. It depends on who the person is, whatever they're comfortable with.
Okay. So what was that like breaking into the tech industry, especially the software side of things?
The software side of things, first of all, when I started at TRW, I did not and had not finished my bachelor's degree. TRW actually was one that helped to pay for the first degree, my business IT/IT degree and minor in computer science. And my computer science degree, I completed that. McDonnell Douglas, I believe, is the one that finished that up. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the main difference is that it's always, you know, like when you're looking for a job, and when you're interviewing at the end of the job interview, either I was had too much education or I wasn't qualified. It was I never could figure it out until I could learn how to interview to get into the field. Also, this is also when affirmative action in the 70s and 80s. And I believe if it wasn't for affirmative action, I probably would not have had the opportunity I had in the 70s. I had some managers that were of European descent. I remember after around about 5 years at TRW, this manager came to me and he said, I really like you. And he says, but the only thing is we can't put you on these more technical projects because you don't have a degree. And he was sitting there going through, you know, my performance appraisal. And he says, and then also for your information, he says, if you really want to grow in the company, he says, my advice would be to you is to probably leave the environment here because all my colleagues there saw me as I didn't earn it. I came in on affirmative action. I was broken. So therefore, they didn't have that respect that I should be getting. And he says, your work is solid. So
this was early on in your career.
This is early on in
at TRW.
Yes. And okay. and I felt the guy was being genuine. He was explaining to me the best way he could. And he told me that after I get my degree and going on to another company, then they would respect you because you're coming in the door with a degree. So I said, okay. I said, that makes sense. So in the 2 weeks, I quit and went to another part of TRW. And he was shocked. He said, that's quick. I says, yeah, because I know what my value is. And in TRW, I sold that value. And they were really impressed.
Right.
So, but later on, I found out because I didn't have that degree again, and TRW was still paying for it. And that's why I didn't want to leave TRW until they finished paying for it. And there was an individual that I would say because when I moved the other, they would not move me up. They have different grades like 5, 7 and 9. They moved me at the level of 5. But I found out this other guy I was working with, he was on the grade of 7. And I found out he just received his degree and he was white. Mm-hmm. And I said, why is he on 7 and I'm on 4 and I'm training him? It didn't make no sense to me. And so after I understand what was going on, and then plus they hired in another a white woman, and she was also a grade above me. And then one they got, I think he was Hispanic, but he had his degree from UCLA, and he came in even 2 grades up above me. All these people with no experience. So I went and dug into the background of the white person that just converted over to computers, and I found out he worked at TRW for 12 years, and they took his experience as a camera person, and they gave that and increased his where he was, you know, on the pay scale because he had 10 years as a camera person, but now he's supposed to be a developer. It made no sense. And they told me I couldn't use my experience as a scientific programmer and a business programmer. So that's why I started at 5 and I didn't have a degree. I said, well, I see where this is going. So one thing is that my dad taught me, wherever you go, you put your best foot forward and learn everything you can. And I'm glad he taught me that.
That's great. So that's a good segue to my next question. What are some of your biggest success and failures in the industry?
Going with the success, as I moved off to network systems, with the company there, we had to understand 44 different operating systems. Now today, it's just basically Windows and Linux and all these proprietary machines. And
wait a second, you had to know 44 different operating systems?
Yes.
Wow.
And I was competing. At that time, I was really mature. I had already worked at TRW, McDonnell Douglas as a Rogers and Associates consultant, and I actually worked Fluor Corporation, and I also worked at Northrop, and I left Northrop to go to work for them because, you know, I was looking for a challenge. And after there, with the 44 different operating systems, understanding system languages, because I had to dig into the code that we were, that this company was selling, you know, to the public, because this is Hyperchannel. You know, this is where they were the fastest network, 50 megabits per second. And plus they, instead of TCP/IP, it's called NetX that we had to debug on the customer sites and et cetera. When I'm getting my success there, I was the first year when they started, you know, the engineer of the year, I was the engineer of the year. And then I went out from that. I went into management and I was on a fast track to corporate until I had to move to Minnesota, and I said, no, too cold. I'm not going there.
So, you didn't want to leave Southern California to go to the Midwest?
No. And then plus on top of that, you know, I wanted all my children to go to Long Beach Poly. So I wasn't having it. So I bailed out.
Wow. So Long Beach Poly and the weather kept me
in California.
Wow. Amazing.
So failures. Let's see. I'm trying to think of failures. It's kind of hard. I mean, if I really dig deep into it and I've really dug into that, I guess any failures is, wait a minute. I took one. One I really stuck out with me more than anything went in management. I wish I had not been so hasty and with some of the things I did with a manager that I worked for him, but they were so upset with him, they flipped our roles. He was working for me at the time. And since he was not a manager and he was just an engineer, I cut his manager's salary off without really talking to him. And that's about only, I mean, that there, I would say was a failure, just acting too fast. And I say the arrogance that I saw in the industry of what I call now today, I call that white boy privilege. I don't want to pattern my life after that. I want to be fair. And I think people will do a lot better if you're fair with them, you know, do what you say, you know, mm-hmm. You can build trust. And I would say I failed on that end because I acted too fast. Mm-hmm. And as far as it's a technical thing, I can't think of any too many things that I really failed with, you know, that thing. I pretty much met the challenges because that's the way I feel today. You know, anything can be done with computers. It's just a matter of time and testing. You can get it done.
Okay. So my final question is, how have you influenced your children into getting into the tech industry?
Well, computers are related to everything. You know, I don't care if it's music, sports. And just think of anything, you know, politics, like, and sports. If you can do statistics and you can have, matter of fact, there are some handheld, you know, smart objects for football. And you can see the tendencies, you know, statistics, how often does this particular coach call this particular player going to this defense and what have you. And if you can see, like, you're down at the final in the fourth quarter, you can see where their favorite place can go, because people are kind of like, they're not random. They kind of stick to old habits, and you can figure out the habits, you can beat them at their own games. So technology would help you to do that. Matter of fact, if you look at what's the movie where Denzel was in, Remember the Titans, you remember he went to, and the teacher broke it down, all the stats and everything. And that's what helped them be a better coach. The music industry, you know, it's one thing is there's computers in all the
MIDI,
the MIDI,
audio workstation, yes, software, yes, you know, everything. And yeah.
I believe in the more you know about your career, you're going to rise to the top. So technology in our cars, anything you can think of, even like, you know, recipes. Of course, you got the iPad, smartphones, they help you to remember a lot of the stuff. You can offload it into your smartphone and things like that. And these next generation of kids, oh, they're going to be fine. Who's that? Yeah. So in other words, the technology, you know, you got your office suites, it just goes on. You know, secretaries are gone. You know, office suites replaced the secretary, because I was coming up where, you know, the secretary would type all my memos and stuff, mm-hmm, like that. But now, I type them myself now.
Right. The secretary. It's easy to yeah, use a word processor. Yes. I remember when I was in school, I was one of the first kids to have access to a word processor and turn in my papers in elementary school typed. I remember the teacher said, you have to handwrite your paper.
Oh,
after that,
yeah.
Yeah, I got that got nipped in the bud quick, yeah. For me, due to your influence. But yeah, I wanted to thank you, Theotis, to everybody else, Dad, to me. And I wanted to thank you. How can people connect with you online if they want to learn more about software development and technology?
Oh, yeah, that's a tough question. I'm not going to put out my cell phone because, you know, it's funny that, you know, I'm into technology, but when I look at Facebook and when I look at Twitter and all this, I keep saying, yeah, I'm going to get in. Yeah. But busy doing development work. So what I might have to do is actually set up some account like a Facebook or something like that and actually start, you know, working with it. But, you know, I don't mind. I'm an open book. I love talking to people. But when people can start getting into your private things, then that's where I have problems with.
Well, cybersecurity, that's a discussion, yeah, for another day. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z on Bashani Radio and iHeartRadio and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City, where you can listen to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z on any mobile phone or tablet device. If you want to learn more about any of my guests, you can always contact me directly at www.ladyzze.com. That's LadyZhe.com. And this is the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z, where we explore tech and enjoy the music.
Visit Qsurance.com. Are you paying too much for flood insurance? Paying on a FEMA insurance policy that is through the roof? Call Qsurance Group at 866-QUE-2121. That's 866-783-2121. Or go to their website, Qsurance.com. That's Qsurance. QSurance.com and get your flood insurance quotes straight to the point. They have access to multiple private market flood carriers to make sure you get the lowest price. Are you in a non-participating coastal barrier or cobra community? No elevation certificate? Not a problem. Call QSurance Group at 866-QUE-2121. Licensed in New Jersey, Virginia, South Carolina, Wisconsin, and Texas. You can also compare your home, auto, and business insurance at www.qsurance.com. It's free, so why not let them help you save money today? Call 866-783-2121 or go to qsurance.com now.
Locked in and fully loaded. Bashani Radio and Verke Radio. They said we couldn't do it, but we global now, worldwide. Boom! In your face.